Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
Good. So, well, warm welcome, everybody. And I'm joined today by Liz Stewart, who's joining us from a snowy Colorado. And she's going to be talking about some of the exercises that she uses for engaging the vagus. So we don't normally talk about, well, some people talk about activating the vagus, but of course the vagus needs to be active for us to be functioning at all. So I prefer the word engaging. So I'm going to show you some slides and then we're going to go into a few practical things around this. So I would say the first thing is, because this is a kind of a time when, you know, we kind of need to get familiar with our vagus, if you like, particularly what we call the ventral vagus, which is sometimes called part of our social nervous system or our social engagement system. So that's kind of what we're going to concentrate on this evening. So I'm just going to start by showing a few slides here. And what I would suggest is perhaps if you can just get yourself comfortable, because this is going to be a little bit of an experiential webinar. We're going to be doing some exercises together. So it's good if you're in a place which is comfortable, where you're engaged. And also, I would say, where you're a little bit contained and feel safe. Yeah, so we'll talk a bit about safety in a sec, but that's kind of key to begin to working on with this material. So I'm just going to start by sharing my screen here. Great. So we had a subtitle for this, which is a bit cheeky, which is, oh, is that not moving? Oh, yeah. 50 Shades of Periaqueductal Gray. Periaqueductal Gray is part of your, like, it linked in with your autonomic nervous system. It's a tenuous connection, but I thought it was quite funny. Anyways, or PAG. So we've had a few webinars on the vagus before. We've had Stanley Rosenberg, who wrote this book, and we'll be showing you a couple of exercises from this book. And we've also had Deb Dana recently, who's collaborated a lot with Stephen Porges on clinical applications of the polyvagal theory. So some of these books here, Stephen Porges' book, The Polyvagal Theory, came out quite a few years ago, and it's a great book, but it's pretty dense and pretty difficult to understand, to be honest. So Deb Dana sort of coordinated with him in producing The Polyvagal Theory in Therapy, which is that book. And also this one, which is not listed there, which is the clinical applications of the polyvagal theory. So when I'm going to be talking with Deb Dana on the 5th of May, and we'll be going through hopefully some of the material that she presents in her books as well. So you're probably familiar with Stephen Porges' work and just how he developed the whole polyvagal theory. And we've covered this in a whole series that I did around this. So quite simply, what we're going to be concentrating on really today is kind of the new vagal pathways, which is sometimes called the ventral vagus. And of course, this is our social engagement system. It's linked in with a lot of different cranial nerves to do with the face, and particularly the upper part of the face, the voice, and the heart. Porges often talks about it as the way we express ourselves. Our heart is expressed through our face. So some of the exercises we're going to be doing are around connections between the face, the throat, the heart, and the belly. So when you look at this here, with the new vagus, this is more of the myelinated vagus, which you see in mammals, and the way that we use these systems, you could say, is primarily to keep us safe and for survival. It would be completely unrealistic for us to be constantly, for example, in the ventral vagus. because sometimes we do need to, you know, move and run away or and sometimes we do need to withdraw more into the old vagus. So I'm not going to spend long on that because we've covered that in previous webinars before, but the ventral vagus is all to do. Well, one of the things that's key with working with this is safety and what is called the vagal break, which is part of the new vagus, which comes into the fore when we do feel safe and also when we're socially engaged. So the vagal break comes in really to kind of slow or inhibit our sympathetic nervous system in order for us to engage socially. That's part of it. And for that, it needs safety. And Porges talks about a neural code. He sometimes talks about a neural love code. So there's a kind of sequence to this, and safety is kind of the first part of that. So that's why I was saying earlier, when we're working with this, we need to feel safe. And we need to feel safe in our bodies and in our surroundings and with the people that we're with. This is key, really. And part of the thing that will help with that is reciprocity. So there's engagement with others, give and take, you could say, facial expression and being received and being heard. And Porges talks a lot about mobilization without fear. This is kind of a state where we can really rest in our system. We can rest in relation to others. And we see this happening in the therapy room a lot when people lie down on our couches. And this is a mobilization without fear. Sorry, it's more to do with how we engage with others, maybe in play, that kind of thing, right? So there is a kind of, we're going in and out of our sympathetic nervous system, you could say, but in a very regulated way. And we see this a lot with children. So the other thing I was talking about, this immobilization of touch without fear. This is, we see this more in the therapy room. So this is more where we feel completely safe to kind of sink down into contact and relationship. And we also see this in intimate relationships as well. So we see this in the therapy room. This is a nice picture of me working with a mom and a baby. And so they're kind of deep in their ventral vagus. And we also see it in relationship with animals. This is me working on my favorite pig called Clementina. And you can see that this pig would not let me do this unless she felt completely safe with me. So you see this in mammals, not just humans as well. Now I'm going to show you a little, I like to have a bit of fun when we're doing this. So I'm going to show you a little very short video now. And it is a video that will probably slightly activate your sympathetic nervous system. So this is what we might call immobilization with fear. And I want you, if you're happy to watch it, it's only for about 30 seconds or so, just get a sense of what happens in your body as you watch it. It's actually a roller coaster ride. And just notice what happens in your body as we watch this. So how is that for you? So you might notice certain things happening with your heart rate. You know, your sympathetic nervous system coming into play there. And of course, in that situation, you can't move. So it has a very interesting effect. The rest of the time, I promise you, we're going to be doing some more calming things. So safety and what Porges calls neuroception. And neuroception is distinct from perception. It's our innate kind of sense of safety that we use all the time, whether we know it or not. And you see animals do this all the time. If you look at a squirrel outside, you know, it'll go from using all its senses. So, you know, the eyes, the sense of smell, the hearing, very alert. And then it'll go from that very quickly into eating. Yes. Yeah? So a calmer state. So neuroception is kind of running, you could say, all the time, whether we know or not. And it's assessing whether we're in a safe environment or not, whether we're safe with other people. And it allows us, particularly mammals, to engage in social and engaged behaviors, because we need, as mammals, we need to be socially engaged in order to survive. This is why you could say that through evolution, we developed our social nervous system. And so this allows us to be capable of distinguishing environmental and visceral features that are safe or dangerous or life-threatening. And it also involves the inhibition of certain key things. For example, one of the things that happens when our social nervous system comes to the fore is that it inhibits low frequencies. There's some connections between our facial muscles and our ears, and we'll do a little bit of an experiment with this later on, which inhibit sort of predator noises. So the little muscles in the inner ear get engaged, which help us to dampen out those kind of sounds, low frequency sounds particularly. So what do animals do to feel safe? What are our cues for safety? And that those are very, very individual from person to person. Some people will feel safe out in the wilderness. Other people will feel safe in their houses. And also for us, in terms of whether we feel safe in our body, that varies a lot. Some people feel their body feels safe and comfortable, and other people don't. We see this a lot with clients, don't we, of course. So I talked a bit about in the previous webinar about how we can increase this sense of safety, particularly in a therapy room. So things like, again, reciprocity. This is all to do with sharing common experience and getting people to trust us will increase this. Active listening, so we're not just, you know, it was interesting looking at pictures in the old days when people used to do you know, psychoanalysis, and you see pictures of Freud sitting in a chair not even looking at a client who would be lying down on the couch. Now this is interestingly because it's not particularly socially engaged and might not increase a sense of safety. Compassion versus empathy. Compassion really is a way of involving our social nervous system. And things like explaining well how we set up our clinic, you know, the fact that there's no low noise, there's no interruptions, the lighting is nice and low. And so all these features, that how much time we spend with people, even our use of humor, can be, and use of ritual. So like, you know, the way our clinic is set up, the way people are greeted at the door, all these kind of things are really, really crucial in a therapy situation, and how we use touch and how we negotiate touch. So in sense of how we can increase this sense of safety would be, for example, to slow down our movements, to slow down our speech and use prosody. So that's inflection in our voice so that it's varied, not flat. With the breath, one of the ways of stimulating the vagus is through long exhalation. So for example, if you have to give a speech, one way of increasing that is to have slightly longer phrases so that you're forced to exhale a bit more slowly. Facial expression, like smiling, particularly through the upper part of the face. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but certainly expressing care or feeling care and compassion also stimulates our vagus. We'll talk about some interesting research around that. There's some interesting cues in body language and eye contact, and you can experiment with this a little bit, whether we use our dominant eye, whether it's our left eye or right eye, and how we use those to communicate with people. For example, one of the things that we can do is when we're listening to someone, the way we have our shoulders, the way we have our head, the way we use our eyes. So for example, if I was listening to someone and I deflect my shoulders away slightly like this, that will tend to give the feeling that I'm not actually engaged. And as I bring my right shoulder forward, for example, that might be too engaged for somebody. So I can play with that. So how we use our hands even. If I'm listening to someone and I'm doing this, the sense will probably be that I'm not actually listening and I'm not really engaged. So that won't give a sense of safety. So all these things, there's so many parts to this. Mirroring, Deb Dana talked about that quite a bit last time when I was chatting to her. And so our body language in general is important, and how we set up our environment. So I like to have a bit of fun with this. This is a little clip from a show in Canada, and it's just showing you about what happens when we don't make eye contact. This is a guy who is in a park, and he pretends to be blind, and he sits down at a table and he just stares, and you'll see how people react to that as being quite defensive. Sometimes they get quite upset. The good thing about this is that he repairs at the end. So he always goes up to people and, like, you know, shows them that it's a show. So I'll just show you this. It's quite funny. Here we go. Great. So what we're going to do with this, I was thinking about like 50 ways of engaging the vagus. There's actually many more than this, and we may have to do this in two parts, I realize, because there's a lot of stuff here. So I'm going to let Liz speak in a sec, but just some of the things we're going to work with today and next time maybe is the breath. So we're going to do some exercises around the breath, some stuff around touch. We can also bring in social activities. This is a bit more difficult these days with social distancing, But normally we can bring in social activities and specific exercises, which we're going to start with in a second. There's some certain physical exercises like sport actually engage our vagus as well. That's quite specific. Music and the use of the voice. Generosity and compassion. There's some very interesting research on this, which I'll talk about later. Eating. So the vagus is all to do with swallowing, the tongue, you know, our digestive tract. Meditation and stillness, you could say, in an embodied way. And also we can use our imagination actually to stimulate the vagus as well. Humor, of course. Being in nature. Curiosity and awe is a big one. I love that one. So we're going to start with some specific exercises now, because I know that Liz has got to go shortly. So I thought we'd invite Liz to maybe talk about some of the ways that she uses, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of Stanley Rosenberg's exercises that he uses. So I'm going to stop sharing now, Liz, if that's all right. We'll bring you in. Cool, Liz. Your microphone is muted there.
How's that?
Cool. Fantastic. Thank you.
Wonderful. Good to be here with you guys. And I like that last video better than I liked the roller coaster one. So,
yeah.
It was a good corrective film to see. I actually was going to share two of Stanley Rosenberg's exercises that I do and I teach, and I have found to be really helpful in my body, and also when I teach them. I've been working with a lot of mental health professionals here in the United States who are sitting a lot and having quite a bit of stress. So if it's okay to jump in with my version of the basic exercise of Stanley Rosenberg's. And
please.
I was going to do that one. I was going to do another one that might be known as a salamander, but I have my own interpretation of it. And then just a little bit of movement that as a structural integrator, I like to put things together in a way that creates some movement through my body. So I'll start with the basic exercise. And I would say that this has been very pivotal and something that I've been doing regularly. I do it typically when I'm lying down. But when I teach, I'm not lying down, so I might be sitting or standing. So the first time you do this, you may want to try it out lying down or sitting. And so you want to start out by finding a position that feels pretty comfortable. And then if you can, interlace your fingers, and you're going to place them behind your head. Now, a lot of people can't interlace their fingers and place them behind their head without putting a forward pull on their head. So you can also just support, because the reason our hands are up here is so that your head doesn't move. So if your hands are here, you want to pay attention that you're feeling the hardness of your head, and also alternatively that you're noticing the pads of your fingers. And if you can't feel those things, just pretend that you can tune into the hardness and of your cranium and the softness of your fingers. And then it's pretty simple. You just take your eyes, and we're all going to go in this direction. I've learned on Facebook and Zoom that my left may not be your left, and my right may not be your right. So let's just go in whatever this direction is. And what you'll do is you'll take your eyes in this direction so you can see I'm looking that way. So I'll sit up in my seat, and I'll hold that to the to this direction. And I'm going to wait now, and I'll breathe. My face does not move with my eyes, just my eyes. And I like to add a little bit of looking, imagining that you can look behind you or really into your periphery, the side body. And you're looking for a yawn, a sigh. Some of us get a involuntary inhale and exhale. And just wait till you have that. And if you have that, then just come back and meet me in the middle. I'll be there when I get mine. And there, I just got mine. A big inhale, exhale. So I just come back to middle, and then we go that way. Letting your eyes look in the other direction. Your face does not go with your eyes, just your eyes are moving. And again, really looking in that direction. And you're going to look for that inhale and exhale, a yawn or a sigh. Or this time I got a yawn. I've noticed that sometimes once you get that, come on back and you can drop your arms. Now, the piece that I left out and may happen to you if you're doing this yourself is just to notice if you feel at all dizzy, I like to put my hands on my ASIS, just medial, and rub a little bit, and it will help bring down some of the dizzy feeling, really feeling along the bone. Now, the part that I left out that I'll bring in for this next piece that I do is just notice your rotation and your range of motion. And then notice your breath. And I really like to pay attention to my breath, how my shoulders are resting on my ribs, what my belly breath is like, what my rib breath is like, and to really be gentle with myself. So this next one, it's really quite wonderful where you get to place your hand on your heart or on your sternum or somewhere in the middle. And then I like to place my other hand over so that I know that I'm not only going to do something for my vagus nerve, but I'm going to get to touch me. Then very gently, as if you're just going to drag your skin or the cloth of your shirt and a little bit of skin that way, you drag down, and then let's take this side, whatever this is on your body, and as if a balloon, I just learned this beautiful way to imagine a helium balloon from my friend Kirsten Shoemaker, as if the balloon is lifting up, you get a little bit of a lift and a side bend, and then I'm going to just a little take my face a little bit into rotation. And then allow my eyes to rotate even further as I'm allowing my hands to just take the tissue down just a little bit and hold there. And again, looking for the yawn, the sigh, the inhale, exhale, which I just got. And when you get that, come on back. And if you don't get that, you can hang out there a little bit longer. I'm also very aware that if you don't get it at all after hanging out a minute, that's okay, it may be happening anyway. So take your hands off and we'll switch our hands. Notice and then switch your hands, have a breath. And take a moment before you drag that tissue down just to notice your back breath. Maybe tune into the back of your head. A lot of times we don't pay attention to our back space. We're so much in the world this way. Okay, so now we take this tissue down gently, the tissue of your shirt and your skin, dragging it down. And then as if a helium balloon is lifting your ear up. And then you're just gonna rotate just a little with your face. The body loves rotation and side bending. And then let your eyes rotate even further around, as if you could see behind you. And I just got my big sigh, but I'll hang out here for another moment. And then when you've had yours, you can come on back, either with your eyes open or closed, let go of your hands, let your arms hang. And then just check your range of motion again. So the way I like to put things together, how's that going for you, John? Is that, are you able to?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you. Yeah, wonderful.
So one last one just to put it together and then I'll pass it back over to you.
Thank you.
This is just something that is fun. And I did hear you talk a lot about fun and humor and smiling. And, you know, part of working with my own vagus nerve and my ventral vagus is to be, to recognize that my face has a lot of expression and to use it in a way that could be comforting for you guys. So I'm just going to smile and show you this exercise. It's an exercise or a movement, but I place my hands up like this. I like to tuck my thumbs in. And all I do is imagine that I have a kayak paddle in my hands. And again, the body likes flexion and rotation. And it feels a little goofy and fun to do this. So I go in one direction. Oh, good. I like seeing you, Julian. It's good to see my pals. And then let's go the other way. This is actually a really great thing to help with that mid-back, lower ribs to lumbar discomfort. And that's it. And then you can drop your hands and breathe. So I have a whole bunch of these things that we can do, but I wanted to share a couple of them with you guys. And it's really, really great to be together again. So thanks for having me back.
Thanks, Liz. Yeah, you mentioned one, I know you've got to go now, but you mentioned
I have a few more minutes.
About the ear.
Yeah, the ear. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Could you share that one as well?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So I have all these different ones for the face, but this one I really like. So I'll have to move my hair out of the way to show you guys a little closer. I like to come in. You can grab your ear. You're not going into the hole. You're picking up on some of the cartilage on each side. And then very gently, as if you're reaching, you're not pulling. So if you imagine reaching in this direction rather than horizontally, and just let your ears, and I like to engage my elbows as if my elbows, when they're out, allow my breath to open up. It's really good for the side body. And I just let my elbows and my hands reach my ears out and breathe. And you may start to notice that that can feel very, very relaxing. If you've studied any cranial sacral work, you know the touch. But if you have not, and if you're in the structural integration world like I am, think less, and then think even less, and then think even less, and even more less, and you've got it, as far as the pressure. Okay. And then just let your hands come off. See how that is.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's kind of working around the jugular foramen, isn't it, where the vagus comes out, yeah. I guess. Yeah. That's why that.
Also allows for more blood flow and color in our faces, which yeah. Many of us are, when we are not engaging with people, we don't get to actually feel that stimulation that happens in our face when we're person to person.
Thanks right. So much, Liz. Wonderful. Yeah brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I'll see you guys soon.
Yeah, Liz is going to be presenting for us next Thursday, I think, and then also doing an assessment series. So yeah, wonderful.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, Liz. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great, thank you. So we'll go back to, I'm going to go back to screen sharing now. And let's have a look at this. Okey-dokey. All right, so these exercises from Stanley Rosenberg's book, which I showed you earlier, accessing the healing power of the vagus nerve. And he did a whole webinar for us on this as well, so it's worth looking at that if you remember. The basic one that Liz has just gone through there, which is the one with the hands behind the head and the eye movement. And he has two salamander exercises in there, the half salamander, which is similar to what Liz was just doing. And then the full salamander, where you do it on like all fours, you're kneeling down with your hands and you kind of move your torso. I'm not going to go through that one because you can read that in his book. So the basic exercise was this hands behind the head, ideally lying down. It's interesting. He also does quite a lot of work because he's an osteopath. Very gently tractioning this skin on the occiput, because obviously you've got your nuclei that control your vagus, the dorsal and the ventral vagal nuclei back here. So when you've got contact in any handhold that you use in any kind of therapy, you're actually cradling the nuclei here of the brainstem and the vagus. So, and he uses some very, very gentle kind of tractioning techniques, which is lovely as well. But in this, you just got your head, hands behind your head like we did, and moving your eyes to the right, holding that. And again, waiting for some sort of response as we did just now. Going back to the middle and then going to the other side. So very simple, and you can also give this to clients if you want to. So, and then the half salamander is similar to what we were doing just then. So without turning the head, eyes to the right, and then tilting your head without raising your shoulder, and again, holding that, come back to the middle, and then go to the other side. So pretty simple. And Deb Dana also has some wonderful exercises and ways of working therapeutically in her book, which she will be talking about as well when we interview her on the 5th of May. There's also a very nice Wim Hof. You're probably familiar with Wim Hof. The Iceman has some great stuff on his website. Which we can't do because they often involve cold water. So and he's obviously great for that. But even, you know, going in the shower or splashing cold water on your face, you know, cold water has been shown to have a very good effect on stimulating the immune system and things like that. But it has a very powerful effect on the vagus. And I know that Wim talks a lot about his work with, you know, can even help with things like depression. So have a look at his stuff. We're not going to go through that now either. And so in a therapeutic way, we are looking at safe negotiated touch. So, you know, a simple thing like putting your hand on someone's back, particularly around the back of the heart, or on the chest here, can be very comforting and very stimulating for the vagus, as long as it's negotiated well. Also, sometimes touching the umbilical area. So just if you want to experiment with this, just placing your hand here on, some people like it just above the belly button or just on the umbilicus, see what feels best for you. But just having your hand there can be very helpful. Slow brushing has a very strong effect on the insula. So the insular cortex is this part deep in your brain, which is all to do with sensing our body and sensing, in a way, how safe our body feels, how good our body feels. So again, this is something we instinctively do when we want to calm someone down, or to a friend, you know, where we're gently stroking the skin. We can try this on ourselves if you want just now. But if you just take your arm and just stroke the skin fairly slowly, kind of this kind of speed, very light, as though you have a paintbrush on your skin. So that kind of speed, like that. So this has a very instant kind of effect on your autonomic nervous system. It can be very helpful for people also in chronic pain as well. So that kind of slow kind of movement. And of course, we can do that on each other if it's negotiated and safe to do so as well. And the kind of therapeutic touch where we are encouraging a connection between the head or the back of the head, particularly where the brainstem is, the face, particularly the upper part of the face, the throat, the heart, and the belly. So we could try a little exercise now, which actually I got from Liz Hampson, but I think it's from Gwen Raimondo. But anyway, it's quite simple. So we could just try this one. So if we just start with the hands to this side of the head, first of all, this is very gentle contact, just a soft contact on the side of the head that feels comforting. And then going to, if you have your left hand on your forehead and the right hand at the back of your head, this is a hold that we use a lot in craniosacral work as well. So again, just feeling into that contact with the forehead and the back. And then we can move from that position. So keeping our left hand on the forehead and then moving to the hand on the heart. And then from that position, keeping our hand in our heart, and then just moving our left hand to hold our belly, just above the belly button there. So this is really helping the connection between the back of the head, the face, the forehead, the heart, and the abdomen. And then lastly, we can keep that hand on the belly and then go back to the back of the head. And you can kind of do this as a kind of a cycle, if you like. It's very nice. So, coming to the breath now. One of the things that activates the vagus and engages the vagus is diaphragm breathing. The movement of the diaphragm stimulates the vagus quite strongly. So when we're doing these, that's what we want to concentrate on, this diaphragm breathing. So things like sighing, you know, oh, this naturally engages our vagus. It's something we do instinctively. And there are other kind of techniques. We could try this one, which is what we call the 7-11 breathing. This is a very particular way of breathing, which was developed by a group called Human Givens. And so one of the key things with engaging the vagus is we want to encourage a slightly longer out breath. So the 7-11 refers to an inhalation on the count of 7. And an exhalation on the count of 11. So it's quite slow. Some people like to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And as you exhale through the mouth, you can, if you like, slightly purse your lips to kind of slow the breath down. So we could try that if you like. So as you're counting this, it's reasonably fast, so we're not gasping for breath. And obviously don't do this if you're asthmatic or it's not comfortable for you. So as you breathe in, we're going to do that to a count of 7. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in through the nose, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10, 11 on the out breath. So you could just try a few cycles of that. 7 on the in breath through the nose, 11 on the out breath through the mouth. Just try a few cycles of that. I'm not going to count it, and just see how that feels to you. And just make sure your diaphragm is breathing. You're breathing into your belly here. And just notice as you do that what's happening in your nervous system. So if you want, you can try that later on as well. There's also a technique which is a little bit more extreme, called a Valsalva maneuver, where you breathe in and then you hold your breath and then you exhale. So what you're going to do is you're breathing in and then you're going to block your nose so you can't breathe out. So you're holding your breath, but you're trying to exhale, but you can't because you're holding your mouth shut and you're holding your nose shut. And hold that just for a little bit, not too long, and then allow yourself to exhale. So you're breathing in, holding with a bit of pressure, and then allow the breath out like that. The lion pose is a very good one in yoga. Those of you familiar with the lion pose, where you're kind of down on all fours and you do this expression like you're a lion roaring. I'm not going to do it now. But one of the things that you do with that is you open your eyes really wide. Now this wide open kind of stare really helps stimulate the vagus as well. We see this a lot, actually. People do this naturally when they're really engaged with someone and they're really listening to someone. You naturally want to open your eyes wide, and that also inhibits these little muscles in your inner ear. It's part of your vagal break, is what we call it. So this is quite a strong way of engaging the vagus as well. And the lion pose does that with the breathing as well. So that's very strong, that one. And of course, there's lots of ways in yoga that we do this through what's called Bhastrika, which is abdominal breathing, sometimes quite fast abdominal breathing, and then holding the breath, and different types of pranayama breathing as well. They all tend to involve this. So we're just going to try one more, and then I'm going to show you, we're going to have a little bit of music. So nostril breathing is interesting. That you probably know that we tend to alternate our breath from one nostril to the other during the day, about every 90 minutes or something. You tend to breathe more from one side or the other. So one way of activating this is quite simple, which is to, if you say, have your left hand on your lap and you are to stop your nose on the left, on the right here, sorry. And you just inhale through your left nostril. And then just change over. So pressing on the right nostril and exhale through the right side. And inhale through the right. And then you're exhaling to the left. And inhaling through the left. And then again, changing over. So you're blocking the left nostril and breathing out through the right. So a longer exhalation. And then inhale through the right. And again, just change over like that. So we see in a lot of kind of religious practices, actually, instinctive ways of activating the vagus. To do with breathing, like in yoga, but there's all kinds of other things as well in religious practices, to combine with movement. So kind of rocking type movements as well. We'll see this in for example, the zikr which is a Sufi practice. I'm going to show you just this little video here. I used to do this with a group called up in Oxford. And we used to go around in a circle like this and repeat Allahu. And on that you have to use your abdomen to do this quite forceful exhalation. So I'm just going to show you, this is a very beautiful zikr from Turkey. So I'm about halfway through this now. So we're going to come back to this, some of the social activities that we can have. I want to just finish with some music, if that's all right. Because for me, certainly music is one of the favorite ways of engaging the vagus. And again, specifically the way that music does this is through particularly if it's got a beat, it's unintrusive beat. Porges talks a lot about the difference, say, between kind of folk music and more music these days, which has a kind of relentless kind of beat. So if it's got a beat, it needs to be kind of slow, unobtrusive, and certainly less low frequencies of tone. Because again, low frequencies tend to be associated with predator noises, and they tend to switch on our sympathetic nervous system, you could say. So I just want to finish with some music. This is from the Allegri Miserere, which is mostly very high frequencies. And the Allegri Miserere used to be performed in the Sistine Chapel. And it was considered to be so special that the Pope forbade anybody from having the music. And the story goes that Mozart, when he was 14 years old, heard it and copied the whole thing down from memory. So this is the Allegri Miserere. It's performed by the Talis scholars. So I'm going to play you out with this, and we'll probably arrange another webinar in a week's time to follow on from this one, if that's okay. Julian, is that all right if I just finish with this?
Yeah, we had one question about how are people with deviated septums affected in their breathing? Maybe you want to answer that next time or before?
Yeah, could we come back to that next time? Would that be all right? Yeah.
Yeah. Is that okay, Hilary? And I'll check on Facebook if there are other questions. We can answer them next time as well.
Okay. So I'm going to just let this run because it's such a beautiful piece of music. And we'll let it run to the end. And you can just listen to as much as you want. And we'll see you next week. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.